You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Hello and welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. This week, we are going to talk about our impressions on Star Wars Squadrons. We're going to talk about Spider-Man being recast and Xbox finally getting revenge on Sony for their policies. This is episode number 23. And we're recording for the week of October 5th, 2020. My name is Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the games industry public defender and the scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zelenkevich.
Hey, what's up?
No, you gotta do better than that. Like, you gotta do better than that after I give you a grand intro.
It's been a long day, man. I don't know, they delayed Shadowlands, and so I've been running up and down and all over the place, and I'm been a long day.
You know what? You owe it to the audience to always show up, Nick.
All right, you always know, show up. You're right, damn it. Let's do this. Hey, how's everybody doing?
Yeah, there you go. That's what they want to hear. That's what they came here for.
Yeah, and
I'm pretty sure we're gonna see the drop offs right now because that's all they came here for.
And I'm out.
Oh man, but how you been doing? I mean, I know your day hasn't been going great with the Warcraft announcement. And for those who aren't in the know, Shadowlands got delayed.
It got delayed till never. They just said sometime before the end of the year, and even then I'm wondering if they're going to hit that. That's never a good sign. Never a good sign when they delay it and don't give you the next step.
Well, I think they just don't want to make the same mistake again. They probably waited so long to announce it in the first place, or to announce the release date in the first place, because they weren't sure. And they're like, we're pretty sure we can get it out by this time. And they're like, nope.
Well, nope. But that's the frightening thing, is the fact that they don't want to announce it because they don't know. It's like, you should know. You kind of should know by now. If it's at all close to coming out, you should know. And the fact that they don't know means it might be
pre-COVID world, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Sure,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's not, that's not a major factor here. I mean, that's obviously a major factor, but the thing is, like, personally, I'm fine. I got my stuff to do in the game. I'm nowhere near getting that stuff done. The expansion will come when it comes. I'm fine with that. No, the problem is I just have a lot of podcasts to schedule around that launch. So it's like, that's where I'm running into the wall. It's like, oh, now I got to... you know, move this stuff around, and it's playing with calendars and spreadsheets, and it's exhausting. But that's my life. So how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I kind of messed up a bit though, because I usually have a method to how I play through games, right? I'll have maybe a short game I'm going to play. I'll have a long game I'm going to play, and I'll have a multiplayer game. Well, I was playing I was trying to play through Final Fantasy 15. I think last week I talked about fixing the problem with the crashing.
Yes.
So I have been trying to play Final Fantasy 15 for a while. Like, we're talking about for months now. And I'll play, it'll crash. And then I was like, let me see if I can actually fix it. And I did. But then I had already started playing Horizon Zero Dawn. And both of those are easily 50-hour games. And on top of that, I have... for Final Fantasy 15 and Horizon Zero Dawn, I have all the DLC. So Horizon Zero Dawn plus the DLC is easily 60 to 65 hours, maybe a little longer. Final Fantasy 15 is probably, you know, even longer than that. So now I have two long games. Then on top of that, I started playing Hades because I just want to check it out. Yeah, no, you don't just check out Hades. You know, no, you play that shit. And so I have also been playing Hades. And now I'm a little afraid to stop because it's like, well, I don't want my skills to degrade and it harder for me to get to the end. I mean, obviously it's a roguelike, so you know, you get more powerful the more you play, but at the same time, you still need to keep your skills up in order to get to the end. So in Hades, it took me about 3 hours, but I got past the first boss, essentially. And I don't know how fast or how slow that is, but it took me about 3 hours to get past the first boss. I only fought her twice. So I made it to her the first time, and then I died right before I killed her. And then the second time I made it to her, I beat her. And then I look at the achievement. Only half of the people who have Hades have made it past the first boss.
Wow.
And I'm like, gamers, you got to do better. You got to do better, especially Hades, because Hades is not a hardcore roguelike. It actually, I'm pretty sure that Supergiant said that they tried to build that game for people who normally don't play roguelikes as well. So it's not that. You got to do better, okay, guys?
That's even Dark Souls. I think Dark Souls is where people get past the first boss, right? Like, that's.
Yeah.
I'm flummoxed. I don't understand.
There was another game. Let me see. I think it's Red Dead. Let me see if I can pull it up. But there's another game I had in my library that I was just shocked that how little people actually played it.
Well, Red Dead, you install that and then just check out the horse testicles.
I can't see it anymore because I don't have... Actually, let me see. Can I go into here? View my achievements. Yeah, I can't see it anymore. So when you get achievements on Steam, and maybe there's another way for me to see it. Somebody might want to correct me. But when you get achievements on Steam, they show you how many people had those same achievements, but that goes away after you play, like after you like leave, essentially. Oh, actually, global achievement stats. Never mind. Sorry. Here we go. Yeah. So Red Dead. Here we go. Only 42% of the player base has completed Chapter 2. 71% completed Chapter 1. That's a 70% drop off in the first 5 hours. And wow. I can see why. I can almost understand why, because the first five hours in the snow are slow, but they make it slow on purpose. You know, chapter three, complete chapter three, 32%.
You know, it makes you wonder, like, I mean, first off, how many games have you bought, even admittedly super cheap on a Steam sale, but how many games have you bought that are sitting in your backlog that you haven't even touched? Like, first, and then second, it's like, if this is a common thing that people are buying games, presumably paying full price, maybe they're even just paying like, you know, $20 for a $50 game or something like that. But to get like just 5 hours or not even 5 hours out of, I mean, how long is Red Dead supposed to be? I think the main story is a little bit shorter there, isn't it? It's still,
it took me 55 hours.
Okay. Never mind. I'm
think. Maybe I'm wrong. Let me just back up here.
No, because one of those stats. Like, one of those things you hear is when people talk about, like, the value of video games. It's like, oh, I paid, like, $50, but I got, like, 100 hours of content out of it. So it's like, you know, it's like, if I was to watch 100 hours of movies, how much would that cost me? And it's like, yes, that's true. But then again, like, you know, like, when you go to watch a movie, you buy a movie, like, unless you're buying, like, those, like, $2 DVDs from, like, the bin at, like, Walmart or something. Like, usually when you, or, you know, if you go to see a movie, you pay your $7.50, actually, what, like, $15, actually. $7.50. I'm like dating myself on the price of movies here. But, you know, you pay your like, you know, $15 for a movie ticket plus popcorn and all that stuff. And you go in there, you know, you're going to see that movie. You don't go into the movie and then like find yourself doing something else. Like, you know, unless there's like an emergency and you need to leave, but like, you know, so it's like you paid for the movie, you see the movie, you're getting your money's worth out of that. Whether or not you enjoyed it is, you know, a separate issue. I feel like for games, it's like you have to factor in how many games people buy and then just never actually enjoy. So it's like, yeah, you might be buying hundreds of hours of you know, enjoyment, but you're only using five. So you just paid $50 for five hours. That's $10 an hour. That's approaching movie prices. And now that's sitting somewhere. And it's, I don't know. I think somebody needs to sit down and just look. There's definitely an inefficiency here. There is an inefficiency at play that people are paying for experiences they're not using. Maybe the solution, and I hate to sound like a Microsoft shell, is Game Pass. Because there you're just paying for a subscription, you have access to all these games, you know, you can kind of take them as you want, and it's, you know, you don't have to worry about having, like, an extensive backlog or anything like that, or it's like, oh, you know, I bought this game, I should, you know, go beat it and whatnot. You know, if you only go 5 hours on a game you got through Game Pass, who cares? Because you got your money's worth, and anytime you're not spending in that game, you're probably in another game on Game Pass. getting there. So maybe that's the solution to all of this. Maybe Microsoft is way smarter than we think. I think I'm officially a Microsoft shill now.
I'll add that to your title. Yeah.
You're going to see me out back, like throwing my PlayStation in like an oil drum and just letting it on fire.
Yeah, man, I do think that solution works for some people. Like, you know, they just want to dip their toes in a game and check it out. I know me, like once I start a game, whether I like it or not, I will probably finish it because either A, I'm like, okay, it's got to get good at some point, or B, I need to finish this so I can rip this thing apart properly.
New meaning to rip and tear, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I need to rip it apart properly. When somebody says it's a good game, I'm like, no, it's fucking not, and here's why. You know, there's very few games that like I'll start and not finish. Like I never finished Breath of the Wild. I just put it down and I said I was gonna go back to it, and I was like, I never did. So, but enough about all that. I do want to get into Star Wars Squadrons because that came out this weekend, and you know, I played it as you know, probably a lot of people were looking forward to. But before we hop into that, I would like to welcome any first-time listeners. I want to say thank you for listening, and I'd like to thank and welcome back any returning listeners, and I'd like to give a special thanks to our supporters on Patreon, as well as our supporters on Twitch, our Twitch subscribers. And if you want to follow when we go live on Twitch, you can follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. We usually stream our shows. We stream the games we play as well. And yeah, we're working on some new content for that as well. And if you want to follow us in another place, you can follow us on Twitter at The Mash Network. And you can also join us on our Discord at mash.gg/discord. We'd love to have you there and join our growing community. All right, so Squadrons. I do enjoy the game. I am enjoying the game. I think it's fun now. But when I first picked it up, it was not. And I think that's going to be its biggest problem, to be perfectly honest with you. Just for clarity, Nick's nodding his head in agreement. So we got two people in agreement here, folks. yeah, I think that's going to be its biggest issue. On my friends list, as of now, like I've put in about 8 hours into the game. But no one on my friends list, I don't think, has put over 90 minutes into the game. And it definitely takes more than 90 minutes to kind of get the hang of it. The game is technical, man. Even the single player, like it is technical, which it is like a space flight sim. So you kind of, that's what it is. That's what they advertised it. They did not advertise it as anything different. The developer did nothing wrong. EA did nothing wrong. It's not false advertising at all. But when it comes to Star Wars games, especially more recently, Star Wars games are usually pretty accessible, you know? Yeah, I mean, even Fallen Order, which is like a Souls-like game, has a difficulty you can put on that makes a game like very, very easy, very simple. Battlefront is the definition of accessibility. Like, you don't even have to play games to engage in Battlefront. That's how easy Battlefront is to pick up and play, and it's that way by design. Even some of the older games, like the Jedi Knight games and stuff, like they weren't difficult to play; they were fun, you know. So yeah, like usually that's what you expect with Star Wars games, but this is not like a typical Star Wars game. You know, one, it's a technical game. You can pick it up and play it, and they do go through lengths to teach you how to play it. Your first, like, you know, 3, 4, maybe even 5 missions, you constantly get these notifications in the single player, at least, which they recommend that's what you play. Actually, I don't even think you can go into multiplayer without doing a piece of single player first. They keep popping up with these notifications that show you how to do certain things. Like the first time somebody fires a missile at you, it gives you advice on how to dodge missiles. It gives you advice on how to manage your speed. But these are all things you have to do on a regular basis as you're playing the game. And this is just a single player. And the multiplayer, in my opinion, it's a bit harder to do these things. But you have to control your speed during fights. Like, you can't just hit the, you know, push the throttle all the way forward and then go do a dogfight. Like, you're going to be pulling the throttle, you know, back and forth as you're doing these dogfights. You got to watch your power output, the different systems, and depending on what type of vehicle you're flying or type of ship you're flying, it determines how many types of outputs you have, right? Like, for example, TIE fighters they only have the engine power output and the laser power output. But X-Wings have engines, lasers, and shields, you know? So you have, and you have, like, you can set up there is a mode that makes it easy where you do like a one touch and it moves, like, you know, one of them all the way up to the top. Or you could actually be a bit more granular and have it, and have a one touch only move it up a little bit. And if you wanted to move it all the way up, you have to hold it down. You know, you have to select your targeting systems. Do you want to be able to target everybody? Do you want to target flagship systems? Or do you want to target objectives? You have to manage your shields if you're in an X-Wing, which, you know, not only do you have to watch your shields depleting and put more power to the shields when you really need it, like let's say you're trying to escape, but if so, let's say somebody's chasing you, right, and they have a bead on you and you need to get away, you would like put, you would take the power from the lasers, put the power into the engines and the shields, take your shields, put them in the back, all while trying to move so this guy isn't beating the shit out of you. You know,
I mean, if you've watched a Star Wars movie, you see where they're like, they're piloting and then they're usually flicking switches. It's always like in the upper right or whatever, or maybe
they
like right in front of them.
Nailed it. Yeah. They nailed that because that's exactly what you're doing. Like when somebody is on your tail, you can't just like, you know, bob and weave your way out of it. Like you don't just lose them that fast. So you have to like, you know, put the shields on or, you know, give yourself more shield and put it in the back. You know, there's been several times where, you know, somebody's, I've been kind of zeroed in on a target, so I'll put my lasers all the way up, and somebody catches me off guard with my shield power low, blows me right the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, you can, in like the TIE fighters, you can overpower your engines, or you can overpower your lasers, you know? So yeah, like there's just so much to do. It's a very technical game, and playing it is strategic and mechanical simultaneously. And I think for hardcore fans of that, that's going to be really good. They're really going to like it. And when you're able to do it, it's great. It feels good. But man, like when you fuck up and you die because of it, it's like, oh my God, like it feels so bad. Like that's the trade-off of it, you know? And I think that's going to be like the biggest issue. Because like I said, most people that I've seen who have it on my Steam list have only played it for like a maximum 90 minutes, you know? So I think it's like people are, it sold really well. I think it was like number 2 in the UK charts. I think I saw that. And yeah, like it's sold well, but I think that's the issue that it's going to have, that people are going to see how technical it is, and it's not going to be as fun as they thought it would be, like just kind of hopping in an X-Wing or hopping in a TIE fighter and flying around with it and, you know, controlling it.
Now you said it didn't really, it wasn't quite like Rogue Company or
Rogue Squadron.
Do you have any experience with the old X-Wing versus TIE fighter games to compare it to that? Cause my understanding is it harkens back to those.
I played them so like when I was so young, I honestly cannot. It's one of those things like, yeah, sure, I played it, but it's like me remembering the first Duke Nukem I played. You know, remembering the details of it. So yeah, that's the thing. You know, it's about you gotta watch your repairs and, you know, stuff like that. So that's what the game is, and that's what they said it was going to be. They said they're like, you know, they're building the game with a high skill ceiling, and they are, because if you can be an ace pilot, like if you can be really great, and you know, it's the game is controlling the ship. That's the game, not shooting down other ships. The game is controlling your ship, you know, better than the other person controls their ship, you know. And in the multiplayer, and I'm gonna get into that in a second, it's about picking the right ship. Cause I've played some people in Dogfight and they pick like the support ships. I'm like, no, dog, you don't do that here. Not in Dogfight. You know. And I'll get into that. But you do have, like I said, you do have different ships you can choose, but each side has the same classes. Like you have your, you know, balance fighter, which is like the X-Wing and the TIE fighter. And then you have like your A-Wing, which is like your assault fighter, kind of the A-Wing and the Interceptor. You have like your support ships. I forget what the names of the support ships are, but generally speaking, the support ships do not fire lasers. They fire like ion or cannons, and they're for support, and I'll get into it. And then you have the bombers, right? But then there's still differences between the sides, right? Like I said, TIE fighters don't have shields. X-Wings do. X-Wings, actually all of the Rebel ships have shields, which you would think would be the other way around, right? Like the Empire would have the ships that have the shields built into it.
No, because the Empire has the resources to just throw fodder at you, basically.
Oh, that's true. That is true. That is true. So, but, and it changes the way you play, because when you're in a TIE fighter, you have to rely more so on your mobility and, you know, not getting shot, period. Whereas with the X-Wing, you can tank sometimes, right? You know, like if I'm going into a ship and I'm trying to get underneath the shields, I can pump my shields power, like, you know, up higher and then face my shields forward, you know, and then make it under their shields. So, whereas you don't have that with the TIE fighter, or even the TIE interceptor, right? But then, like, you have the Y-Wing, which is, you know, the bomber for the Rebels, and you have to get on top of your target to bomb in the Y-Wing, whereas with the TIE bomber, you just have to, you have to lock onto the target for a certain period of time, and you can shoot bombs at a certain distance. So everybody has their own advantages. It almost feels like it's kind of like a StarCraft situation, right? Where you have the Terran, you have the Zerg, and I almost want to feel like the Empire are like the Zerg, where it's like, you want to live, don't get shot then. you know, be fast, be nimble. That's kind of what they do. And I will admit, even like when I'm playing like the multiplayer and I'm playing the Empire, for me, it does feel easier to shoot down the Rebel ships, because they're just not as nimble, versus like, you know, when you're in an Empire, like you're in a TIE fighter or especially a TIE interceptor, you could just like, your maneuverability is there. Like you just start darting down, and the ships are smaller on top of that. So it is, yeah. I wonder how that's going to work out in balance, you know, but I can't see it being really perfectly balanced, you know, but just like StarCraft, it's not perfectly balanced, right? You know, but we'll see. But I think most people are probably going to go Rebel Alliance, especially when you see those shields, you know, but there is a single player. The game's only $40, so I actually didn't expect much from a single player, and neither should you, by the way. I'm not going to tell you I was pleasantly surprised, because I wasn't. Don't expect anything for a single player. Do not buy this game for Star Wars Story. Do not do it. I'm telling you flat out, don't do that, because the story does not add anything of value. You do create two characters. You create an Empire character, and you create a Rebel character to begin a game. But I think you see their faces once each. I haven't beaten it yet. I'm almost at the end. You see their faces once each, and then that's it. And sometimes you'll hear their voice like every once in a while. But for the most part, you know, it doesn't even matter who they are. You know, everybody talks at you. Even when people are asking you questions, you don't reply back in your voice. Like they just kind of, you hear silence, and then they're like, good, I'm glad. You know, they're just like, you know, it reminds me of Wing Commander, except Wing Commander had full FMVs when you would click on somebody, right? Whereas this, you click like, you know, cause you're standing in one spot. You cannot move around the dock, and you just click on a person, and then it goes to that person, and the person starts talking. Every single dialogue is too long. Every piece of dialogue in this game is too long. Everybody's long-winded. They're trying to give you back history on these characters that I'm sorry, but I just can't see myself caring about them. I don't. Wedge was there. Ooh. He was cool. He shows up Sorry if I spoiled that for somebody, but he does show up in the game at some point, but it's not like super major, but he's there. There was a, I didn't see this before the game came out. Like, it was on the Steam page, but there is like a cinematic from the Empire side, like one of the Empire pilots, which was pretty cool. But that's another thing. Like, with the single player, you don't even get cool cinematics. You don't. You don't even get cool, like, you know, dogfight cinematics, which is a little disappointing, I will admit, you know. But I do, you know, with the Star Wars games, I do like when they show more of the Empire side outside of the Sith, right? Because when you come from the movies, it's just kind of like this. The Empire is just overarching evil organization, and that is it, you know? Because that's all you see. And to be fair, I mean, George Lucas did model them after the Nazis. That's what he did. So I don't think I don't even think he thought too much into it. But the people who worked at Lucas after the fact, they have built a really, I think, intricate, not society, or I would say just structure in the Empire and how it works. And you get to see that kind of here a little bit. And you also get to see that in Battlefront 2. I did appreciate that. Like, that the Empire is filled with Empire families, you know? So that was pretty cool. But other than that, like, you know, the single player missions are good though. That's the thing. Like I said, like, I spent a lot of time talking about the single player story and how you shouldn't go there for it, but the single player missions are fun. That's what I will say. I did enjoy the single player missions. So you can enjoy the single player if you don't want to play the multiplayer. And it, like I said, it's a $40 game. So I was a bit surprised by that, but the single player is not really that long. Probably talking about 5 hours, which is par for the course for EA. Any game that has multiplayer attached, I wouldn't expect a good single player from them, or a long single player. That's why Jedi Fallen Order was like, what, 20 hours long, but no multiplayer. But yeah, the single player is good. I would, you know, one, it teaches you how to play the game in the first few missions, but then it just kind of gives you some challenging shit to do. Like, I had this one that was actually kind of frustrating to me. I was flying a Y-Wing and a Rebel Corvette was in trouble. And they're like, oh, go save the Corvette. I'm like, dude, I'm in a Y-Wing. Like, and they had, I counted, they had 15 TIE fighters go after this Corvette. And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna have to come back to this one because there's no way I'm just not that good of a pilot to take down 15 TIE fighters in a goddamn Y-Wing.
Bomb the Corvette when the TIE fighters are around it. Like, shouldn't it take out all of them with it?
And also destroy the Corvette. Yes.
But you got the TIE fighters.
Oh yeah, that's what matters, right? But yeah, so yeah, single player missions are fun. Like I said, they have side objectives and stuff for you to do and try to accomplish, so it's cool. For the online though, which I think is what most people will be playing, because like I said, single player is not that long, you have two options right now, which is a little light. I feel you have dogfight, which is basically like a 5v5, and you have fleet battles. I personally am not a fan of fleet battles because fleet battles also include AI. So not only everything I talked about do you have to worry about with human players, you also have to worry about that with AI. Like, I've been on top of human players and almost had one, like, had him like dead to rights, almost had him dead, only to get snuck up on by an AI player and like they would crush me, right? Or I would get too close. I get in range of, like, you know, an Imperial Reaper or something like that.
That's very Star Wars, though. That's how the trench run ends, is the Vader's right on top of Luke, and then out of nowhere, Han, like the AI, comes in and takes him out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing about it that that's the only thing. Like, I like the more direct dogfights. Fleet battles can take a long time. Like, once you get past the initial part of it, I think they put a 30-minute timer on it. Like, they put like a 30-minute timer on this thing. And basically the way it works is, like, you know, you have this bar in the middle and it shows your morale. And in order to move forward, you have to push your morale up. So at first you're only fighting other TIE fighters, fighting other, like, you know, ships, like smaller ships. Then if you can destroy enough of them, you have enough morale to push into their territory, but then they also pull back. So now you have them plus their, like, defensive ships. And if you manage to destroy their defensive ships, then you can pull back to their capital ship, and it's the same thing. You got to get through that. So it's like a Star Destroyer for the Empire, of course, and I forget what it is for the Rebels. But it takes a long time. It has the AI. It can go back and forth. And I guess the biggest problem is that it's like really team oriented. It's really team oriented. Like, you need to have a good composition of ships. Like, you need somebody in the support ship. You need somebody in the bomber. You need somebody in the assault and somebody in, like, you know, the balance ship. And then they also need to be doing their jobs. Those capital ships, those defensive ships, they have shields on them. So me with an X-Wing shouldn't be going and trying to laser it to death. You know, you should send like your bomber there to bomb the shields, you know.
Can you do the Holdo maneuver?
Oh, God, no. They actually maintain cannon in this game. They maintain canon in this game. For those who don't know, that shit she did was not canon, because hyperspace does not work like that. So, but yeah, I mean, that's why I wasn't a huge fan of the fleet battles. And I mean, you could say that, oh, well, you just need to get together with a team. Yeah, I could say that. And that's part of the problem. Like, Overwatch has been out for 4 years and people still can't pull together good team comps in Overwatch. And this, with all this that we got to do, plus manage a team comp, like when somebody calls for something, you need to be in the right place. Like, people are going to have a hard enough time staying in formation in this game.
So are they going to have to like restrict it to like a 2-2-1 comp or something like that? Or
I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they're going to stay the course, or if they're going to, try to make it more accessible. I don't know if they're going to try to turn it into an esport, because this would actually be more difficult to watch than Overwatch, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
You know,
you would need like a separate camera, like just tracking the battle, like as an impartial observer, to actually really follow it. I don't see how you could just follow it just from people's viewpoints. That's what you want to see. If you're watching the dogfight, you don't want to just be you want to see them actually dogfighting.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what their plans are. I would imagine eventually they will add additional game modes. They'll probably, I don't think we'll see more DLC, like single player DLC. If we do, I actually, even though, like I said, the story, not great, I would welcome more missions, to be honest with you, because that would keep me playing this game. That'll get me to open this game again. But maybe I could see them adding more ships. Like, oh, we're going to add a DLC for Hoth, and now you can do those ships that trip up the walkers. Snow maybe speeders, have a game mode around there. Yeah, snow speeders. Yeah, there we go. But yeah, overall, I'm gonna say, watch Twitch, watch YouTube gameplay before you buy, because not for everybody. It is not. Oh yeah. Don't even attempt to play a mouse and keyboard. Don't. I did. And I, like, when I got halfway, not even halfway through the first mission, and I pulled out my Xbox controller.
You don't have a flight stick?
No.
I've heard very good things about using a flight stick with this game, but it's.
I can imagine so. Yeah, I can imagine so. So, like, it depends how into it you are. But yeah, I would just be careful, because this isn't like a regular Star Wars game. It's not for everybody. So, but yeah, like, I just wanted to talk about Star Wars a little bit since it came out. Thought that'd be interesting. All right, so let's move on to some Sony news. Technically speaking, it is Sony news because it's a Sony exclusive. But it's more Spider-Man news. So Spider-Man, Marvel's Spider-Man, that's the name of the actual game for the PS4 and now the PS5, has been recast. A totally different person. Basically, what happened was Insomniac revealed Marvel Spider-Man Remastered for PS5. And part of the reveal was Peter Parker, and that he has a new face. You know, the old actor was John Bubniak, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. The new actor is Ben Jordan. The voice actor is unchanged. And the cause for this change isn't because of a problem with the actor. The problem, I shouldn't say the problem. Basically,
the problem was the actor, but not in the way you would think.
Well, technically speaking, yeah. Like, they didn't have, the problem was the actor, but not what you would think. So basically, I guess, you know, with the PS5 and everything being higher resolution and more detailed, they needed somebody who more closely resembled the voice actor so that the mouth can match up better. And so they couldn't use John Bubniak. They had to go with another person, or Ben Jordan. I guess the voice actor just cannot do mocap. I guess he's not an actor like that. So they didn't use him. And that is the cause for the change. So I'll read here from comicbook.com. It said, according to Insomniac Games, the decision came down to the fact that in order to improve the face model of the character and bring it up to next-gen standards, the team needed a face model that more resembled the game actor, the game's voice actor, which is where Ben Jordan comes to play. And this is a quote from Insomniac. In order to bring the best performances to players with our next generation Marvel Spider-Man games, because, by the way, this is going forward. This is going to be the guy going forward. We have recast the face of Peter Parker, said Insomniac Games at the time of the reveal. We loved working with John Bubniak on the original game. However, to get a better match to Peter Parker Spider-Man actor Yuri Lowenthal's facial capture, we have cast Ben Jordan to be the face model for Peter Parker on the PS5 console. He looks incredible in game, and Yuri's moving performances take on a new life. Taking to Twitter, creative director on the game series, Brian Anathar, should have looked that one up, revealed that the decision wasn't an easy one, but it was one that had to be made. And obviously, it's the internet, so people are upset. They're leaving messages on the new actors page, like, not my Spider-Man, you know, and showing support for the old actor with the hashtag bring back Bubniak, and also downvoting the new trailer, as you do on the internet. And I'll be honest with you, I don't like the change, personally. I don't like it. But at the same time, like, eh?
you know, frankly, this is good. This harkens back to Spider-Man's origins in the comic books, where every so often you get a new artist on him, and he draws Spider-Man a little bit different, and he draws Peter Parker a little bit different, and yeah, maybe you like the art change, maybe you don't. And that's all this is. I mean, we've had how many freaking Spider-Mans? You know, Tobey Maguire can be your Spider-Man. You know, Ben Jubniak or John Bubniak. You know, let them all be your Spider-Man. I don't care.
Okay. I'm sorry, Nick, but I'm going to have to disagree. And I'm going to say that's not like them going from, you know, Tobey Maguire to Tom Holland. I can't even remember.
It actually kind of is, because the one guy looks kind of like Andrew Garfield, and the other guy kind of looks like
Andrew
Tom Holland,
Garfield, so, right?
Yeah.
This is like, no, this is more of a Star Wars thing where they replaced Anakin Skywalker in Return of the Jedi with the same one from the prequels. You know, this is like if they took Tom Holland and put his face over Tobey Maguire's in the original Spider-Man.
I know why
films.
They didn't do Tom Holland, because he's probably really expensive, but
oh yeah.
But I'm surprised they couldn't, you know, like somehow like go to somebody and be like, can we just like get that, slip that into one of his contracts somewhere, that we just gotta use his face? Like, I mean,
well, and another thing about Tom Holland, and one of the problem I actually have with this Spider-Man is that John Bubniak looked like an older Peter Parker. This one looks like a new one. He looks like a high school student. And maybe once I hear the voice, if the voice is the same and the voice still sounds very mature, then it's not going to be that big of a deal. This is why it will be a bad idea for them to have Tom Holland, or even try to emulate Tom Holland, because he looks like a kid. I mean, I know he's not a kid, yeah, but he looks like a kid, and he portrays a high school student in those movies.
Right.
So, like, no, like, this Spider-Man is supposed to be experienced. The first boss, the first 10, 15 minutes of that game is you taking down Kingpin, one of your biggest enemies.
What?
You didn't. Oh, that's right. You didn't play the game.
No, I didn't play the game. So, no, that's. Well, you know, I guess now as a comic book fan who's perfectly fine with artists changing, I'm not cool with Kingpin going out like a punk.
Yeah, dude. Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, the whole opening of the game is one supposed to get you directly into the action, which it does great, but you go to Kingpin's tower. The police are all outside. You go inside and you take down Kingpin. That's the beginning of the game.
That's, you know, I could see them just like starting one of the movies like that, where they're like, we're going to start this in action. And like, you know, like, but like, yeah. And then people are going to complain, because it's like, why is Kingpin a punk? Like, it's not. No,
he definitely isn't. That's the point. The point is that he's not a punk even in the beginning, you know? And so basically, like, yeah, this Spider-Man is supposed to be experienced. That and the look of Spider-Man matched that. He's not supposed to be high school Peter Parker. It reminds me of the cartoon, right? Like, the cartoon had, I guess he was he a college student? Like, he was definitely working. Obviously he worked at the Bugle, sorry. But he was, doing science work, so he was an intern, so I imagine he's in college.
Yeah.
Right? At that point, but he was an older Peter Parker. He was experienced already in the cartoon, so.
Right. No, I don't know. I think they should have just, like, done DLC where it's like, my face, and then, like, now he's younger.
There you go. Nick, always thinking. But, yeah, so Spider-Man has a new face. At the end of the day, it's still a great game. Most of the game you will spend looking at the back of Spider-Man's head. So it really doesn't make a difference.
That's true. That whole game is all about getting different costumes anyway. So really, how often are you seeing his face?
Right. So more on the PS4. It turns out that your PS4 saves may not work on their PS5 upgrades. This comes from Yakuza Like a Dragon. Or I should say, this started with Yakuza Like a Dragon, where they confirmed that PS4 saves will not work on the upgraded version of the game. And this has raised concerns that not all PS5 upgrades will take your save data. And, you know, after further investigation, it looks like it's not really mandated by Sony. It's optional if you want to have the save data, or it's optional for the game developers if they want to have their save data migrate to the new versions of the game. And I think some people would think, oh, that's not that big of a deal. However, if you are in the middle of a game and it's a long, even a long game, like, I would say Spider-Man's like somewhere between 20 to 30 hours. In this case, in Spider-Man's case, your saves will move over. So I just want to make that clear. But let's say they didn't. But if you're halfway through a game and you switch over to the PS5 and get the upgrade, and then you got to start from scratch, that's no good. You know, I don't know how long Yakuza Like a Dragon is, but it's basically saying, like, it almost defeats the purpose of the upgrade, in my opinion. Like, you can't smoothly transition from one console to the other.
Now, the upgrade, is that then, like, okay, so you have Yakuza on the PS4.
Mm-hmm.
You put that disc in the PS5.
Yeah.
Does that count as you're going to then play the upgraded version, or are you still playing, like, the PS4 version on the PS5 and your save would carry over?
So here's what I think is going to happen with the upgrades. Because, let's be clear, those PS5 upgrades are different games. Yes. They are different games. This is like if you went from the PS2, the PS3, and they both had the same game on them, you bought two different copies. That is how this works.
Yeah, okay? And you'd be crazy to expect that, oh, I'm going to take my PS2 memory card and jam that into my PS3. Where would you jam that into?
Well, a lot of people think the way the upgrades work is that when you pop the disc into the PS5, it just upgrades a couple things, maybe downloads a texture pack, and that's it. No.
Ooh.
It's a totally different game. So what I think is happening is when you put the disc into the PS4, it triggers an update like it does on your PS4. Like, if you pop a new game into your PS4, and, you know, when you pop it in for the first time, it triggers an update and you got to download it.
Yeah.
I think when you pop it into the PS5, it's going to trigger an update if it's a free upgrade, and it's going to download that the whole game. It's going to download the whole game for you. Hopefully PSN is a bit faster when this comes out. Yeah.
Now, if you'll excuse me for a moment, I need to put my Microsoft shell hat on. And the way you were saying that you could just play your game on the next-gen console, that's how the Microsoft thing will work. It'll just take whatever game you have and give you the best version on that console.
Yes, it will. Like, so basically, if you pop in the Xbox One version of, what's a new game coming out? Dirt 5? Dirt 5, right? It's going to say, oh, you have an Xbox Series X. You have an Xbox Series S, and it downloads that version for you. You know, obviously, all of the different versions are not on the disc. Or right. It may work differently for Xbox. I wonder if on the Xbox, it actually just maybe downloads additional textures or something like that. However, On the PS5, I'm pretty sure it's not going to do that. Even for games on the Xbox that are not smart delivery. I keep cutting Nick off. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised if it may even be that the PlayStation might just download some extra textures and stuff, but it may still count as a different game and treat it like a different game. Most likely it's downloading the full game, though, in that case.
Yeah, that's what I believe that is going to happen. It's actually just going to download the full game. So, it you know, that's the only thing about, like, the current technology is great because you get to, you know, if something's broken in the game, they can still fix it after the fact. You can get new features in the game, get new content. But I do miss the days where you would just come home, pop a game into your console, and start playing it immediately. Immediately. Even if a game has no patch, it still has to be installed. You know? It still has to be installed. So, oh, yeah. Good things and bad things. But
I think in the long run, though, there should be a drastic reduction in load times if this is all done properly. And so, like, yeah, you pay for that time in the install up front, and then you make it back up with load times and whatnot later. Right. Ideally, it's not going to work that way.
Yeah, ideally. So. And so, yeah, let's move into a little bit of Xbox news. It's not really Xbox news, it's Xbox trolling, actually. So, Xbox UK poked fun at PS5 upgrades not being free. And so, basically, when news broke that you have to pay extra to get Spider-Man Remastered, even if you have the game on PS4, Xbox UK sent out a trolly tweet. The tweet says, "Here's a thread on how you can upgrade games on Xbox Series X, S with smart delivery and a few easy steps." And then it points down. And if you look at the post below it, it just says, "Just buy the game." And it has that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio, and I'm pretty sure it's Django, you know,
yeah,
with that look on his face. Microsoft has been waiting 8 years to pull this off. They have been waiting 8 years. And I'm not an Xbox fanboy. But I am so happy for them that somebody at Xbox marketing has been waiting for this opportunity, and they just did it. And you know what? Spot on. Congratulations. They did it.
They pounced like a cat. Yeah. A jungle cat.
Oh, yeah. They were like, yep, it's my time to shine.
just for reference, what you're referring back to was after the whole thing about how would you share a game when they're all digital and whatnot. And
yeah,
like you know, then Sony put out the tweet like, "This is how you share a game if you're on the PlayStation." And then it was somebody was handing Yoshida just a disc. They just handed him a disc.
It was just the box of the game. They're just handing it to him.
And he's like, "Here, take this." And it's like, "Done. Game shared." And so yeah, I mean, it was, again, it's one of those things. Both cases where the solution is so simple, it makes all the shenanigans that you have to use to get around the other system look crazy. And this is, you know, the best, they say the best revenge is what, a dish served cold or whatever. And this is, I mean, this dish is 8 years cold. Very well done. Now we just have to wait 8 years for Sony's response, unfortunately.
Yep.
If they can even do that.
Yeah. I don't know who did it, but congratulations, person. I don't know, man, woman, like it
camera TV
legend. Congratulations, legend. You know, great job, because I liked it. So while we're still on the Xbox, Microsoft has sent Xbox Series X's, I'm pretty sure they're X's, to the press.
Yes.
And I'm not going to get into the actual articles that were written about the Xbox Series X, because they're fucking stupid.
You know, I want to point out for the record, this is why they don't send us anything.
No, this isn't about the Xbox itself. This is about how, you know, about the reporting of it, right? So from what I can tell, it looks like they don't have any next gen games. They're only testing backward compatibility on the games. And so the reporting was all like, "Oh, this game loads faster. Oh, the gameplay is so much smoother. Wow, I can play Destiny at 60 FPS. Such a better game now." You know, and then they would write stuff like, "I can't go back to my Xbox One." Well, no shit. This console is the most powerful console that we've ever seen. The other console's 8 years old. The other one, the One X, is 4 years old. What did you expect? You know, I looked through a bunch of the articles looking to see if they had a chance to try any new games. You know, maybe they got Dirt 5 or something like that, but no, nothing. There's nothing. And on top of that, they can only try certain games. Like, there's only certain games Microsoft would allow them to try. I think it was like a list. But, dude, no shit. It's a good console. Yeah, we know.
Well, you know, I'm trying to think back to, like, prior consoles that had backward compatibility. And I guess I remember, like, I remember when we got the PS2, Final Fantasy IX was the game I was playing at the time. And so I remember taking that from my PS1 and putting that in the PS2 and being like, and I was like, I think, like, maybe it did look a little bit better. But then again, like, one, like, now in hindsight, I just remember, like, the graphics from that time were crap anyway. So it's like, it was, like, better looking crap. But second, it's like, I'm also the guy that I got an SSD and thought World of Warcraft looked better. So really, I'm in no shape to really be judging any of this, but I mean, yeah, it's nice that, like, not only do you just, like, just the backwards compatibility in itself is a nice feature. The fact that it doesn't just play the game, but it also does, like, improve the performance, as you would expect from a better system. That makes sense. That's nice. But yeah, like, if you really want to review the console, like, they need something at least that, you know, like, here's, like, even if it's just, like, a, like give them, like, the old demo discs. That's what you need. Like, the first level of Crash Bandicoot and, you know, right. all that kind of stuff. Like, give them the first level of, I'm not Cyberpunk. I don't know. I'm trying, like, whatever games are coming out. Halo Infinite or something. Well, actually, not that one. But, you know.
Yeah, like, showcase it. Like, give them, like, a showcase disc or something like that, you know. And I saw a couple people on Twitter saying, well, you know, look at Microsoft is really putting in a lot of work. You know, Sony hasn't even sent out test units yet. And I'm like, yeah, they have no reason to. They have no reason to send out their test units until their games are available, until the games are ready for, like, you know, to show. Which, I mean, let's be honest, you're not going to, it's very rare that you're going to get a review copy weeks in advance. I think, like, the only company that really would send me review copies before weeks in advance is, like, Rockstar. But that was for, like, GTA. They know I'm not going to get through GTA in a week. You know? They want to give you time to actually play the game. They set the embargo and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, they may actually have games that have embargoes and things like that. But at the same time, it's just like these articles, like, dude, like, yeah, of course it's smoother and loads faster.
This speaks to the different strategies behind each of the consoles, where for Sony, the strategy is very much the games are the focus. And so if you don't have the games available, there's no point to getting the console. Whereas right. with Microsoft, it's the experience is the focus. And you look at Games Pass, and that's Games Pass isn't just about the new releases. It's about everything that's available on there. And a lot of that stuff is going to be backward stuff that you're going to be playing. That's going to be upscaled. And it's, you want to show off, like, hey, all this other back catalog that you get with that, it's still cool and you can still use that. And so to let them use the console in that regard does show off that feature. It does make, you know, the Game Pass a bit more of a, you know, like an enticing buy. So it makes sense that they would want to feature that. But yeah, you still want to see the games and, you know, send them like the Unreal demo. Let them run that Unreal 5 demo on there.
Yeah, like, see, it does work. I told you. Right. I told you it works. Yeah. So, well, let's move on from that. Let's talk about the Mass Effect trilogy that's not officially announced, but it's expected in early 2021. So a Mass Effect trilogy, which they're saying it's going to be called the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, was reported back in May and was expected to be released late in 2020. But now it appears that that has been pushed back to 2021 due to issues with the first Mass Effect. And this is from a chunk from VentureBeat. He said, the primary factor holding up development beyond the pandemic is the original Mass Effect game. It currently does not live up to the quality of the rest of the package. It will make for a poor first impression for new players, and it might disappoint fans who won't go on to play and experience the impressive upgrades for Mass Effect 2 and ME3. This is a problem with both the visuals and gameplay. The people working on the game understand the issues, and they want to do it. Really want to do right by the franchise. Yeah. So here's what I have to say about that. Unless they are completely redoing the gameplay of Mass Effect 1. It will always be a poor first impression. I mean, Mass Effect 2 is significantly better than Mass Effect 1. Significantly, in terms of gameplay, significantly better than Mass Effect 1. And it's much closer between Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. But between the first two, significantly better. And, I mean, from a graphical perspective, I can understand that too. Because when did that come out? 2007?
Yeah, I mean, that game, I hate to say something from 2007 is ancient, but yeah, something from 2007 is ancient at this point. It's a, it's as old as a it's as old as a Promethean relic.
I will be, Nick, I will be honest with you. I played it, I started playing Mass Effect 1 again, I think like 2 years ago. Because I wanted to do a Renegade playthrough. I wasn't smart like you. Like, you were smart when you did it. You did both. You did a Paragon and a Renegade for each game and then just pushed them through. No, I wasn't that smart. But the I wanted to do a Renegade playthrough the whole series, and I didn't want to do the thing where you just make your character in Mass Effect 2. I'm like, no, I'm not going to cop out. I want to know the full stories, you know? But it didn't look that bad. It didn't look that bad. Like, you can tell it's old, but it didn't look that bad. But the thing is, like, you know, it is a third-person shooter, and it just doesn't feel great to shoot in that game in the first one. It doesn't, you know? And that got significantly better in Mass Effect 2 and continuing to Mass Effect 3. So are they going to completely, are they completely redoing the gameplay for Mass Effect 1? I can completely change the combat system in Mass Effect 1 with the systems for Mass Effect 2 and 3, you know? I mean, that's a possibility, but I would say, oh, go ahead, Nick.
I think you have to. I think you have to. If you're flat out stating here that the visuals and the gameplay, you don't feel that game is up to snuff, then you're committing to rebuilding that from scratch and redoing that.
If that's the case, I don't see it in 2021. I just don't. Don't see it in especially in early 2021. It takes too long to build games.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see that happening. This feels like the kind of thing where they're like, okay, well, you know, we'll just re-release them, and then like, no, we got to fix up Mass Effect 1, and then before you know it, Sephiroth is showing up at the end of the first chapter.
Yeah, yeah, like no, like I don't see it. So, one thing that's definitely not coming to Mass Effect 3 is the multiplayer. It's definitely not coming because essentially it's a live service, and EA doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
That's hilarious.
So I mean, and then later in Mass Effect 3's life, a patch was added so that it made the multiplayer unnecessary. But you know what, I played Mass Effect 3 after that patch came out. You know, I still played the multiplayer to capacity to get my battle readiness all the way up because I didn't want any mistakes. I didn't want any accidents, you know. I wanted the very best ending I can get, and you just can't get the best ending in that game. The ending of the game has no best ending. Mass Effect 3 has no best ending. I am sorry. I am sorry. There was, you know, while that was going on, there was a ton of debate about, you know, whether people, gamers, were just being whiny or complaining. And this is, you know, this is one of the reasons why I think we got, you know, HateTube kind of took off. You know what I'm saying? This is just one of the reasons HateTube took off. Because you had a ton of articles calling gamers babies and saying they were whining. And I was just like, okay, well, I guess we'll see. And when I finally got around to it, I was like, no, they were right. They were 100% correct. This ending is a cop-out. These endings are cop-outs. So, yeah. You guys can take that how you want, but they are. Great game. Great game. But it's just, the ending just isn't great. And, you know, that happens in a lot of things. Look, all three Batman games have bad endings. And I love the Arkham series, but you can't tell me any of those games had a good ending.
Why worry about the ending when you know like 50% of the people aren't going to get 5 hours in?
That's true. A lot of people aren't. Like, you're going to, actually, there's tons of people going to talk great about those games and then never finish them.
So. there are people who might be speaking right now who talk a ton about games they never even played.
Who could that be? It's not me for sure. Like that's dead serious. Like, so, must be that other person that's sitting in the corner.
Yeah.
Not saying anything on the mic. Our third host.
Yeah. That guy,
that guy. All right. We're going to go ahead and move into our final topic here. This one's a bit, I'm not going to say it's political, but it's definitely not jokey gamey like we've been talking for the rest of the episode. So Beyond Good and Evil 2 director Michael Ancel left Ubisoft amid investigation. And so last month, actually, I think it was just last week, Michael Ancel, who was the creator of Rayman, and he was working on Beyond Good and Evil 2, retired from Ubisoft. And I think they said he was going to go work at a wildlife reserve or something like that. It made it seem like he was just ready to move on. But new reports from a, I think it's a French publication, a national newspaper, Liberation, or it has an accent mark in it. So I think it's pronounced another way, but in America, it would be called Liberation. They made a news article and new report suggests that he was in the middle of being investigated after complaints about his toxic management style. And that he retired on the same day he had taken part in a multi-hour session to answer questions about the investigation. So, and I hate saying this, an article from Kotaku reports. They say the Liberation report, which details the development hell the game has been in for several years, shares accounts by Ubisoft employees who accuse Ancel of being so difficult to work with that other managers were eventually brought in to limit the number of people who had to interact with him. They also blame Ansel's management of the project, which reportedly included constant changes in scope and reworks, for an unusual amount of exhaustion, depression, and burnout experienced by members of his team. And then one source told this newspaper, he is capable of explaining to you that you are a genius, that your idea is wonderful, then dismantle you in a meeting saying that you are nothing but shit, that your work is nothing, and not speak to you for a month. So, actually, it continues, said, in an Liberation interview, Ancel said he was unaware that people felt this way and only seemed to acknowledge that the general difficulties associated with making an ambitious big-budget game had taken its toll on Ubisoft Montpellier, where Beyond Good and Evil 2 is being developed. The suffering is from both sides. Yes, it is hard, and there are people who are sad, Ancel told Liberation, based on the translation by Kotaku. He went on, if you want, we can work the terms. For me, the sadness is maybe more profound. Of course, when someone is burnt out, it's terrible. Of course, when someone stops a project after many years, it's part of their life that goes away. I don't devalue that, but you have to consider the context of such a creation, its ambition, its complexity. Also, I'll just finish this up here. Ancel says that the news report is fake. that the news report is fake. He says, take few people with rage and jealousy and let them speak in the name of hundreds. Publish the news so fast that it combines with the sexual harassment from the other news at Ubisoft. Is this serious? Is this what you expect from a national newspaper? I will fight for the truth because such an accusation are a shame. I worked hard on every of my projects and always had respect for the teams. The accusations are wrong. He also said that he couldn't have done what they said he did because he didn't manage the teams. But if you talk to according to the team members, they had to have managers interface between him and the teams because of how he worked. You know, I mean, I am more inclined to believe the employees, that's for sure. Because this sounds like somebody I've seen before. I've known, you know, I'm way more inclined to believe the employees, like somebody that's so high up, they just can't see or can't relate or can't understand what the actual problem is, you know?
And they're so far not removed, but they just have no concept of the fact that they're a terrible manager and they don't see the effects of how terrible they are on their employees, even though there's high turnover and nobody's happy. They're completely oblivious to that, and they think they're just coasting along, and they're great.
Yeah, they're just well, game development's tough, deal with it.
Exactly. It's not them. It's the environment. It's not them, and they don't realize what they're not a good manager. They're not a good leader, and
right,
you know, they need to look in the mirror.
Well, and that's the thing. In positions like this, in technology positions, you have tons of people who do not have people skills. They don't have people skills, you know. So it's totally not understandable, but I can totally see him being the type of person, especially like, you know, he's been in the games industry for a long time. He's an accomplished developer. And, you know, complimenting on one hand, but, you know, then giving a full thrash to somebody like, oh, no, your idea is idiotic. You know, why do you even work here? You know, something like that.
Right. And that's the kind of thing where, I mean, how do you, somebody needs to critique his style there. But then again, like at that level, is he even going to believe that person critiquing, or is he just gonna be like, you don't know what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. It'd probably be like, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, somebody's probably said something to him about it. He's like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
I made Rayman.
Exactly.
So.
I'm just getting tired of all these articles about Ubisoft and Ansel culture.
Ansel culture? Oh, Nick. Oh, Nick.
Look for that joke on the cutting room floor.
I don't know, it was so bad I might have to leave it in. But, yeah, I mean, this is, I will say one thing. I mean, he didn't get fired at all. He did definitely retire on his own.
Yeah.
And Ubisoft says the same thing, because they're in the middle of the investigation. It doesn't look good that he left. It doesn't look good that he left. Like, more than likely, it's true. Because I know they had somebody else, I forget his name, but he was under investigation for sexual harassment. He just resigned.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was like a vice president or something like that too.
This seems more like just a clash of personalities, that he was not a good, you have somebody in a management position who's not a good manager. It's not going to end well.
Right.
Like, it's like, yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense. Like, you know, once there's some conflict there, like, you know, he's got no reason to stick around. I mean, he can, you know, he can pretty much do whatever he wants at this point. You know, I'm sure, you know, any publisher would love to, have whatever next game he comes out with, you know, and they just have to get through the part of working with him, so to say.
And it's sort of a tough position for Ubisoft, because, you know, Ubisoft may have been well aware of the fact that he was not management material. He would not make a good manager. However, the way corporations work, it's like, well, if you want to keep talent, you gotta pay him more. And in most places, like, you have to promote somebody in order to get them paid. You know, different positions have salaries. Not to mention, he probably just wanted to also, you know, climb the ladder himself. So if you want to keep the talent, you gotta promote him. You can't be like, well, you know, you're not really management material. Why don't you just do this thing for us? You know, and not have any career advancement. Like, that's not really viable.
Well, it sounds too like they tried to contain him with those, like, oh, we'll have like your manager's interface with him for you instead of, you know, and it didn't even work out. It's, you know, because,
yeah,
it's, you know, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the dude has the bona fides. He made Rayman, you know, he's Beyond Good and Evil. I mean, he shows up and, you know, I think to a certain degree, certain developers reach a level of acclaim. They become like rock stars. I think he kind of, you know, hits that level. And I don't want to say this excuses him and allows him to act that way, but I think the problem is it just makes it hard then when he has such a poor leadership ability, it makes it hard to then build the team around that. Because you have, you know, it's the square in the round hole. It's just not going to fit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think this shows that Ubisoft is, because there's nobody that's excluded from these investigations if there's an accusation. So Ubisoft, I believe, is truly trying to clean house. But we'll see how that shakes out for them, you know, because I'm sorry, like, you're going to have some high level people like this, or very talented people who aren't meeting social standards. So how does that really, like, we'll see how it works out for Ubisoft. I mean, they should do the right thing, which is rare. Like, usually you don't see companies doing that in the first place. So I don't know. I think it's going to take years for this whole situation to really shake out, to be perfectly honest with you. All right. So on that sad note, we'll actually start closing up here. I'd like to thank you guys for listening this week on Mash Those Buttons. What is happening this week on Mash Those Buttons? That's a good question. I should know. But it's been kind of a whirlwind week, guys. Sorry. But yeah, so we have a new Sit Rep Happy Hour on Monday, a new Push the Point on Tuesday, new Double Tap on Tuesday, new Dropping Spicy on Wednesday, new Torn and Goblin on Wednesday, yes, and then also a new Wondrous Tales on Wednesday. So You can look for all that. And yeah, you can also look for us on Twitter, which is twitter.com/TheMASH Network if you want to keep up with what's going on with this show or with what's going on with the network in general. I have been slacking on the social media, probably because somebody else should be handling social media to begin with, to be perfectly honest with you. But I'm going to try to get back on that ball. But if you want to know, you know, keep up to date with what's happening on the network, just follow us on Twitter. Nick, where can they find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network on WoW Talk, where we talk about WoW news and guild stuff like Shadowlands being delayed. And also on the Torn and the Goblin. This week, we are talking about the history of Bolvar Fordragon and why he is going to be a major player in Shadowlands whenever it comes out.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at Josh Stradamus. You can find me on Twitch as well, streaming on the Mash Those Buttons channel, which is twitch.tv/MashThoseButtons. And like I said earlier, you can follow that for when we go live. And we'd also like to have you join our Discord, mash.gg/Discord, and you can join our community. And we encourage you guys to reach out to the show or reach out to us with comments and questions. You can either, you know, reach out to us on Twitch or Twitter, actually Twitter, or you can reach out to us on the Discord, or you can always email us at contact@mash.gg. If you enjoy the show and you want to help us out, the best way to do that is to share the show with others and rate and review on your favorite podcast platform of choice. You want to take your support a bit further, you can do so on Patreon, which is patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, and you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month and gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. This show is going to be an early access show going forward, as long as we can get the show out or record on our normal recording day. I mean, that's going to change from time to time depending on our recording schedule, or if a game is coming out we want to cover it, you know, we'll see. But yeah, check it out, patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. We also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/stores/mashthosebuttons. And you can also support with a Twitch subscription at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. We appreciate all those methods. And we encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. So with that, we are done for this episode. We'll catch you next week.
Hey, everybody.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMASH Network, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.